Often, authors are at their best when they're writing about subjects they really love or when they're writing about subjects that really make them angry. My guest today is actually doing both. He's passionate about Florida history, and he doesn't like crooks, scam artists, and people who spoil the Sunshine State. Tim Dorsey is a New York Times bestselling author. His first novel, Florida Roadkill, came out in 1999. Since then, he's written more than 15 novels, all part of a delightfully demented crime fiction series. Tim, welcome to Around It About.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
First of all, Tim, I'd like to talk about your background as a writer. In the 80s, you were a police and courts reporter for the Alabama Journal. Then in Tampa, you worked for the Tampa Tribune as a political reporter and editor. And eventually, you quit doing that. You stopped journalism and started writing crime fiction full time. Why did you make that transition from reporting to fiction?
Well, the whole reason I went into newspapers, and this even goes back to my high school paper, was I decided when I was 15 that I wanted to, it just reached a critical mass. I was reading all of these great authors that just blew me away that were not on our, you know, that weren't the required reading. It was like Hunter Thompson and Kurt Vonnegut's my very favorite, and Joseph Heller, and, you know, all of those, Thomas McQueen. And so I idolized them, and so I said, that's what I want to do. I want to write darkly humorous, anti-authoritarian-type books. So I joined the high school paper, then I joined the college. I never was, from that point on, literally, from my sophomore year in high school, I was always working at a paper, whether it was the school paper, the college paper for all 4 years, and then I graduated on a Friday. Monday, I started at a daily paper in Montgomery, Alabama, that you mentioned, and then was hired by the Tampa Tribune, and that lasted about a little over 15 years. That whole time, while that was my dream, I didn't know how to write yet. So I did all that in order to, I figured, well, you know, it's just like running a marathon. It's just a series of steps, and you just have to build up the ability. And so I figured, well, I need a job that I can write every day and learn how to write. And so that's what I did with newspapers. And
But you said like high school newspaper. I mean, I don't know how anti-authoritarian you can be in a high school paper.
And it was a Catholic high school.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So it was. I was more surreal in my writing, you know, than because I was, you know, basically I was reading, you know, short pieces like, you know, that Woody Allen had, and which he was influenced by S.J. Perelman, you know, and all those guys from the Algonquin Roundtable and everything. I don't think they even understood what I was writing, let alone, you know, picking up on any digs or whatever. But it worked out. So, I mean, I love journalism. You can't do it that long without loving it. But it was always my plan for that to build up and do this. But you were alluding to something about making the jump to fiction, and in the type of books that I write, a lot of people think it's like, especially outside of Florida, they think it's like really imaginative, but it's very close to the stuff that I covered in real life.
Yeah. The website FARC.com, the very popular news website, actually has a special tag for Florida just because people perceive it as being so weird it deserves its own category of weird among the weird news.
Yeah, it doesn't shock me at all. And as a matter of fact, whenever there's anything, you know, even if it's weirdness outside of Florida, you know, the thought in my head is, you know, you're just waiting for the Florida shoe to drop. You know, what's the connection? You know, there's got to be a Florida they're almost always – eventually is. And I started this over 15 years ago, and it was like, okay, there was weird stuff coming out of Florida. And so it was like, yeah, Florida's got this, you know, kind of weird, you know, spice to it or accent. And now it's just, you know, everybody's forgotten about citrus and mouse ears, you know, and theme parks. And it's just our chief, you know, cash crop is just strangeness. It just doesn't stop anymore. You could have like a 24-hour cable channel just covering it, you know.
And your books, well, you write crime fiction, so obviously crime in Florida, scams, the drug trade, that's a big part of what you're writing about. But you also write about Florida lore. Really, when I read Tiger Shrimp Tango, your latest book. It was like actually driving down to Florida without having to actually drive down there and having a tour guide who took me to all these places that, you know, I wouldn't normally ever know about or find out about. That was really interesting for me. But, I mean, how do your editors react to that? Are they like, can you just please cut this stuff out and get back to the plot?
They just let me go. They're amused by me on a lot of levels, and they've been wonderful. And sometimes they ask questions like, what is this, you know, not like, you know, why does this have to be in here? But they, you know, sometimes I have to explain that, you know, you pretty much have to live in Florida to understand some of this stuff. But that's the thing that people have picked up on, is if something does seem kind of odd, they realize by now, if they've been reading the books, is that they're getting, you know, a local's perspective on something. And but that's one of the favorite parts of the books, is the real star is the state of Florida. And so my main protagonist, who does kill people, he's kind of the mouthpiece for the state. And he rarely commits crimes or takes revenge unless he can do it in a place that he loves in Florida, and that he can, like, either show his co-conspirators or his upcoming victim, you know, why they should appreciate the history and the lore of whatever location they're at.
Well, yeah, and that's the protagonist of your books. It's this guy named Serge Storms, and he is, as you said, a killer. He's practically a psychopath. He just kind of has his own totally twisted sense of morality, and he kills people who he deems worthy of death, you know, obnoxious, scammy, terrible people. But what I'm wondering is, you started writing this in 1999, is that correct?
Yes.
So that was before Dexter kind of, I don't know, popularized the idea of the lovable or at least likable serial killer.
And when I wrote it, I'm like, you know, who's going to publish this?
Yeah,
there was no blueprint at that point, but I just did it anyway. And the odd thing is, if you look on my website or whatever, and you see pictures of my audience, the chord that I've struck, it's like probably counterintuitive, because it's really, I mean, it really is edgy as far as, and get a little gruesome, but my audiences are probably the opposite of what you'd expect. You know, they're like me, they're middle-aged, they have families and grandchildren, and they seem to be the most law-abiding, as well as the ones who uphold, you know, the unwritten rules of common courtesy. And I guess the chord I've struck is, rudeness is on the rise nationally, but especially in Florida. And they said it's cathartic to have Serge as their proxy doing these things to all these idiots that they know are in abundance down here.
Yeah, well, in the latest book, Tiger Shrimp Tango, it's specifically about scam artists. And Serge gets involved with this private detective, and he goes around kind of exacting revenge on these scam artists. But they're not killers that he's going after. These are people who've just bilked other people out of thousands of dollars. Was that a hard sell to editors, saying, you know, he's killing people that maybe in real life we wouldn't deem worthy of death, but it's a lot of fun in these books. You really get to like this cold-hearted killer.
Yeah, he's an anti-hero, and yeah, well, I make no excuses for the fact that, I mean, he is a criminal. He's criminally insane, and he's a killer. But you know, my audience, I tell you, if you live down here, you don't mind if, yeah, they haven't killed anybody, but if they've taken some senior citizen's entire life savings, yeah, kill them.
Wow.
They're with me on that.
Because you're writing crime fiction set in Florida, and particularly really funny, really demented crime fiction, you get compared to Dave Barry, you get compared to Carl Hiaasen. Are those fair comparisons, or do you think you're just being lumped in with other Florida writers?
No, they're unfair, because it's being way too complimentary to me. No, I say that because I know both Carl and Dave, and before I was writing, you know, they were a couple of my heroes. You know, Carl is incredible, and Dave and I have become friends, and I played in his band. He called me up to join the band, and I said, you play an instrument? And I said, sure. And I showed up. I didn't, but I was going to be in his band. Nothing was going to stop me. So I showed up with a giant cowbell, and he cracked up. But yeah, that's the other thing is, what is with this Florida subgenre of weirdness? And I've read different sort of essays on it, and some people have, I remember one person said that it's not a matter of, you know, like the British invasion where everybody was playing off each other. You know, it's not a matter of invention, but it's a matter of the writers, the offbeat writers in Florida, reacting to their environment. Because if you're down here, you know, it's low-hanging fruit. I mean,
if you're just joining me, I'm talking with Tim Dorsey. His latest novel is Tiger Shrimp Tango. It's part of his series of novels, crime novels set in Florida, featuring a psychopathic killer as the protagonist. His name is Serge Storms. We here on this show, here on A Roundabout, we cover a lot of Southern literature. And I wanted to ask you, do you think this Florida literature subgenre can be counted among Southern literature? Can Florida be considered part of the South?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are parts that are definitely part of the South, but I think it's grown large enough and distinct enough that it's now got its own identity. I mean, when I was growing up, it was just the opposite. It had no identity. It was the land of the non-regional weatherman, you know, accent, you know, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, it was just growing. There was a lot of transplants, and there was no identity. Now it's just the opposite. It has such a strong, pungent identity. However, if you know Florida, there's a lot of the South down here. I mean, there's Yeehaw Junction, and this is coming up in the book that I wrote that's coming out next year. A lot of people think Cool Hand Luke in a classic with Paul Newman was, you know, about a chain gang in, you know, like Mississippi or Georgia. And actually, it was in Florida, and not up, you know, in the panhandle where people say, well, that's really Alabama or Georgia anyway. But it was actually right down in the middle of the state, south of Leesburg, where that took place, where the book was written by the prisoner. So that was a chain gang prison right in the middle of Florida. So that's distinctly a southern part of our history.
The devotion from your fans. I mean, when I went to your website, one of the first things I see is this series of photographs of tattoos. And at first I think it must be you, like, oh my God, this author has tattooed all his book covers on his own body. But then I realized, no, wait, this is your fans who have literally tattooed your book covers on their body. What are you doing to get this kind of devotion from people that they're willing to get Tim Dorsey, Serge Storms tattoos?
There's no plan. It's just happened. I appreciate it. I mean, it's great. And the other thing, if you look on the website, we did this weird thing. I put this Everglades legend who's actually living I videotaped an interview of him talking about the history of a lot of things down there, and we became friends, and he's got this really remote compound where my serial killer hid out while he was on the lam and Dragnet was closing, so he knows all the back roads, and this guy lives way, way out in the back roads, and so he hung out there. So since the books have come out, you know, people now know that these places are real, and there's a lot of the readers who are going around trying to find the locations. And he says, man, all these people are coming out looking for me. And one, you know, interviewed him. It's up on YouTube. So anyway, we said, well, let's do a swamp fest, you know. And it was just a lark, because if you wanted an event to fail, you couldn't pick a more remote, difficult place to get to, you know, because it's down these unmaintained roads. You actually practically have to have a GPS to find the exact spot. And we had like 200 people the first year. And all we did is throw it up on our Facebook pages. You know, we were just, you know, and a lot of them with the tattoos came out. I was on my way down to Key West for Parrothead Convention, because I do very well with the Parrothead and the Jimmy Buffett people. And on the way, I stopped here, and these were all my biker readers, or all my readers that came in on Harleys and leather. And so it's amazing that there's more that unites us than divides us. And that's another thing that is one of Serge's, this is how I write in tangents, but this is one of Serge's things that he's really upset about, all the discord in our country over perceived differences when we have more in common. And I'm learning that through seeing all of the different readers that are picking up on the series.
So we were talking about Florida lit, is it Southern or not? You actually went to Auburn, so you do have some experience in what's traditionally considered the South. This is something you've experienced firsthand.
Yes, and quite a bit, and in a very interesting time. It was the early 80s. Governor Wallace was the governor, George Wallace, and I met Judge Frank Johnson, the federal judge that that permitted Martin Luther King to do the Selma March. And there was just a lot. I was at the tail end as a very young cub reporter experiencing, but I got to experience firsthand a lot of the history that was deeply rooted in the South.
Do you feel like you are a Southerner?
I really was raised in Florida, and it was I guess that's what I'm trying to bring out in the books, because, like I said, it kind of felt like I didn't have an identity. There were Northerners, Midwesterners, Southerners. I really felt like I was rootless, except for Florida. And then now that Florida's got, you know, that's what I saw other writers doing. And I said, I knew I wanted to write books, but I felt that this was something I wanted to, you know, kind of get in on as far as sort of helping carve the identity. And that's what's actually happening among the school of Florida writers is that a lot of them really are describing Florida. You know, like, you know, it started with John D. McDonald, which a lot of real things. I mean, it transcended the mystery genre, and I think most of the ones who are doing it are doing that. And so they're kind of writing the history of Florida in real time in the mystery genre. So,
yeah. And Elmore Leonard, let's see. And, yeah, you said John D. McDonald. He's got the Travis McGee series. And, of course, Carl Hiaasen. Why crime specifically, though? I mean, they're literary, science fiction, I think, would work in Florida. Why crime?
I guess, again, I think that's a response to our environment. I mean, it's weird crime, too. I mean, it's and I guess to even probably – And people talk about it, you gotta kind of be delicate, but it's true. And I probably, like a watershed moment, and a lot of us Florida writers were talking about it, was when, you know, the 9/11 hijackers, you know, they were all down here in Florida and they were living here for months, you know, down on US 1 and, you know, Broward and Southern Palm Beach County, et cetera. And they were like, well, they're living down there. How come nobody reported them? How come nobody noticed? And blah, blah, blah. And if you lived down in this area, they were probably the most unnoticeable people because it's such a strange landscape that it takes a lot to stand out. They were probably, you know, the most invisible people, you know, if you live in this area.
I think I'm probably like a lot of people here in East Tennessee and the North Georgia area in the sense that Florida is a place I go to once or twice a year for vacation to stay in a condo or a hotel somewhere. What I like about this book is I really felt like, oh, here's some places I didn't know about that I probably am not ever going to find in a guidebook. These places that you're writing about, how many of them are real?
All of them.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, no, they're all real. I mean, every once in a while, if like there's going to be like a murder that's going to take place, or some guy owns a business where there's crime taking place, I fictionalize it or I change it, you know, so that you know. But you can tell when my character's passionate about a place where he's trying, you know, if you really know the underlying theme, he's trying to direct the readers to go check this stuff out. Those are real places.
Are there any, like, specific places you would recommend, like a kind of a top three or something like that?
Oh, well, down in the Keys, gosh, this isn't particularly a hidden place, but the Dry Tortugas, which a lot of people don't realize is part of the United States, let alone part of Florida, and let alone part of the Florida Keys. The highway, which was built on, you know, where the railroad was, Henry Flagler's Railroad, ends in Key West. But then if you go, you know, about another 24 miles, there's the Marquesas Atoll. And then if you go, you know, another 40-some-odd miles, there's the Dry Tortugas. And that's probably the most magnificent part of Florida. That's where I would go. And I was just down in the Keys, and there's this backcountry old roadhouse called the No Name Pub, which is that's a special place for me there. This isn't necessarily in the top three. It's just one of the most recent things that I wrote about and went. But I do a lot of driving around, and I've been friends with librarians, and they helped me on research. And what I did was I was speaking about Cool Hand Luke, and I went out, and it took a lot. And I was just figuring, because I have Serge go out and find these places. And even if it's just a stand in an open field or someplace where there used to be something historic, but now it's a Starbucks, at least he goes there, right? And
yeah.
So I didn't know what I would find. And I got the librarian to contact a local historian, and he told me where the old road prison was located. And I took my Lincoln Town Car, and I'm driving out. I mean, it was remote, and I am out on a dirt road in the middle of the woods. And I found it, but only with, like, lots of phone calls and help. And, you know, the classic line, you know, failure to communicate. Everything's gone except the warden's house. I recognized it from the movie. It was just, and it just blew me away. And so, because I couldn't get in, the state of Florida's kind of got this fence work around it. You can't. So I took some Zoom, you know, photography of the warden's house that's still standing from Cool Hand Luke. So that maybe, you know, tell you a little bit about me, whether for good or ill, and how I do these books. And of course, then now my character in the book, he has to go out there, you know, and he finds the warden's house. And of course, he's got some miscreant locked in his trunk, you know, that he forgot about. He goes, oh, yeah, he's still back there. So he finds the warden's house is still standing. So he's got to. So then he's, of course, he has to try to break Paul Newman's record of eating hard boiled eggs. But he can't get a hold of, you know, 50 hard-boiled eggs, so he goes and gets 50 deviled eggs from the local supermarket and gets another 50 for the guy in the trunk. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, the way that Serge kills people, it's always so inventive. It's a real art. Like, there's one point where that thing that people do where you drop Mentos and Diet Coke to make a small explosion, he does that on a grand scale to take out one of the people.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he picks up on stuff. I mean, I got to take notes all the time because, you know, I have to maintain a quality level of murder. You know, you can't just phone it in.
So you're going to be coming up here. You'll be in Decatur on February 24th. You'll be in Woodstock on February 25th. You'll be in Birmingham, Alabama on the 28th, and then in Nashville on March 2nd. What is a Tim Dorsey book signing like? Is it like, you know, the standard author stands there and solemnly reads a passage from the book and then everybody quietly lines up to get an autograph? Is it a little bit more raucous than that?
Yeah, it's not that at all. No, it's but it can run the gamut. I mean, and the best part are the people who attend. I mean, and they just get me started. But, you know, it can be like the Rocky Horror Picture Show of book signings. I mean, it's not your regular. I mean, sometimes people come in costume. They bring me old Florida souvenirs. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I almost have to remember to refer to the book. I just kind of go off of, you know, what has been happening strange to me on the road. You know, so,
well, that's a lot of what the protagonist of the books does. Is he's very big on tangents. It's practically a religion with him that you should just kind of wander off and see what happens.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He even talks about you know, like the art of tangential conversation. You know.
Well, is there anything else that you want to talk about right now?
The only thing I can think of, and of course this is this is Mercenary, but my website is just my name, timdorsey.com, all one word. So if you want to see the titles and see the tattoos, and also I'm selling a heck of a lot of biker shirts and flasks and everything on
flasks?
My
flasks.
Yeah,
really?
Flasks. Yeah, I got Coleman flasks and I got fishing shirts. You know. Square grouper fishing shirts, and so, and that's another thing is people. I originally started the apparel for trade shows, for book expos, and then readers started wanting them. So I just put them up online, and they'll, like, just today. I'm in the back room of a bookstore. I just finished a book signing down in Punta Gorda, Florida, and a whole bunch of people came, you know, dressed in hats and shirts from the website, you know, as well as a couple with the tattoos. So. It's a good living.
I can definitely see why people in Florida would love these books. What kind of response do you get from people like in Canada or someplace that's nowhere even remotely close to Florida?
The reader's response from them is they love it too, and it's they say, you know, I guess the difference is the Florida people like identify, like, I recognize that, I know exactly, you know, blah blah blah. The people from other parts of the country say, you know, you're giving me, you know, I'm not familiar with all this stuff, but having read the books, I know that you're not making this stuff up, that you're just, you know, fictionalizing what you're, you know, going through, and that I'm getting a feel from Florida that I wouldn't otherwise get if I was just reading the Chamber of Commerce brochures, to say the least.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.